Husky 360 Podcast is brought to you by Yeti, built for the wild, Evinrude E-Tech Outboards, Joe Bucher Outdoors, the number one name in Big Fish products, and The Musky Shop.
All right, folks, welcome to The Musky 360 Podcast. On the line today, I've got the man, the myth, the legend, Joe Bucher. How you doing, bud?
Hey, buddy. How are you? I'm a little bit cold up here, and it feels like an early December day. It's only early November, but, no matter what time of the year it is, when you talk muskies, everybody's interested.
Absolutely. It's already cold down here in Tennessee, which is crazy. Definitely seems like winter's coming fast this year, which is a great excuse for us to talk about one of your awesome big fish stories. But before that, I think we ought to talk about the app a little bit.
Well, what's really cool about the app is the app is really the, at 65 years old, if you just rewind my career a little bit, there mm-hmm. was back in the late 80s, I started Musky Hunter Magazine, and it was at the time, it was like the first industry magazine that was a big, universal informational piece for the industry.
Yeah.
And fast forward now to, 2019, and, at the age, this technology age with cell phones and iPads and smart TVs and all this stuff, it was just like, everybody's got their phone. Everybody's referring to their phone for news, for weather, for sports, for everything else. And weather. And I thought, this app thing has got it. I'm always referring to my phone for weather apps and moon apps and you name it, guitar apps. it's just amazing. So, when a friend of mine from that's on the phone with me, you deserve all the credit for this.
Absolutely,
folks,
not.
As we go into this musky thing, we're talking serious muskies. But this guy who I'm talking to on the phone, he watched me answering questions at a lodge. I was getting fired at from all different directions and all different groups, age groups, and experience groups, right, Steve?
Oh, absolutely.
And I'm answering questions on figure eights and how to set up tackle and where to go and moon phases. And I went over to pour another cup of coffee, and he looked at me and he went, "You need an app."
yeah.
And, this industry needs an app. And so that's how it started. And, I think one of the things that, you and me and the group of people here to put this together, what we realized too is that this app's got to be available to everybody, and it's got to be the everything informational piece. Everybody's got their cell phone. Everybody wants information now. 24/7, 365. Yeah. You don't have to have your magazine in the boat. You don't have to refer to some video or anything else. It's, you just hit Musky 360 and your question is answered. And if I'd have had that app in that lodge, I could have answered all those questions. And now that I do, I can tell everybody what the moon, the app tells you what the moon phase is. It tells you what, the conditions. It tells you what to use at the seasonally. It's got all this breakdown of depth chart. It's just we are doing everything we can. And I say we, you and me and a group of people that are working on this app. We are doing everything we can to make this free download, by the way, for everybody listening. It's free. And for those of you listening, you already have it.
You already got it.
But it's one of those things. It was like at my 65 is one of the things I'm proud to be a part of this. I'm proud that we put this together. And it's now it's the Musky magazine of, of the
21st today. Yeah. And one thing you touched on, when it was to tell the story, like you said, it was me, you and Tyler Andrews on that trip. And this whole thing came together while we're fishing. But I will tell you, and the people that are listening, the stuff that's on this app is what we are using, because we just brought together everything that we're using on our trips, me guiding, you doing the Joe Bucher, fishing with Joe Bucher. This information is what we're using. It's not secondhand. It's not just for the consumer. We did this for ourselves also. Because
I know
my phone, I showed you my cell phone. Here it is, littered with drawings and scribblings of depth running charts and everything I could. I cobbled together of what I'm using to guide on the water. And me and you had the conversation in the water. What moon app are you using? What are you doing? And we just brought it all together. So it's legit. And like you said, trying to just do as much for these people, because we all need as much help as we can to catch these things. And the, all that information being there at your fingertips is just so powerful.
What else is interesting is that we keep adding to it daily, weekly.
Absolutely.
You know, the muskie, the weight calculator. If somebody asks for something, we put it on there.
We're going to do it.
Yep. You know, yeah, we look at it, and you know, now today we launched a destinations part of the app. So, and it's just one of those things that if somebody's looking for information on one aspect of the sport, and if it's not, you know, instead of having to search for it, it's all right there on this app. And if it isn't there, we're going to put it there.
Yeah, and let us know. If there's something you're looking for, if you're listening right now, shoot an email. There's a contact form on there for a reason. We want to hear from you, and we want to hear, hey, I really wish you added this element to the app, you know, and we're paying attention to that for sure.
We are. Absolutely. That's what it's all about. And you know, we're having a lot of fun doing it, and it's just going to grow. You know, and speaking of grow, you know, it takes a long time for these big muskies to grow, and so this whole this whole thing with catch and release and you know, catching these big fish and hunting these big fish, it's you know, that's what makes this sport so special and makes it so unique and different than any other freshwater fishing sport, you know. And that's you know, you were asking me you know, what we want to talk about tonight, you know, and I thought, you know, one of the most interesting things is the hunt for big fish and the frustrations that we deal with you know, on every trip, no matter who you are, when you begin your search for big muskies and you haven't scored on a big one, you just don't know if you're doing everything right. And then once you've scored on big fish consistently over time, you know, it becomes, you're still always asking those questions, you know, am I in the right spot? Am I using the right bait? Am I doing this right?
Yes.
Am I doing that right? And my, you know, it's a never-ending process, and it's a never-ending. Folks listening to this, you know, I hunt trophy whitetails the same way I hunt these big muskies, and it's a mind game as well as it's a game of attrition, and then on top of that, it's a game of doing everything precisely right every time, so that even when the conditions are super tough, you know, it only takes that one trolling pass. It only takes that one cast.
Yeah,
absolutely. And then when you get on when you're doing everything right, you know, and you get on that one special day where, you know, everything comes together, and then you can catch numbers of fish and even numbers of big fish, you know. And you and I were talking off the air about, you know, what's my best day on the water? You know, for numbers, my best day was 22.
Wow.
But as a guide, you know, with a guide party, and my best day personally on big fish was 3 over 50, and I caught 3 fish that day, just 3.
And now is that the same story you were telling me in the truck the one day, and we didn't even get to finish it, about the French River?
Yeah, I got onto the French River when I was editor of Muskie Hunter way back in the beginning. You know, one of my jobs, other than just, you know, to compile material for each issue, was also to be kind of the source of muskie news. And we heard rumors about a really big muskie caught out of the French River. This is, you know, this is back in the early 90s, I would say 89, 90, 91. And we heard about a really big fish around 60 pounds, 59 inches, and like it was 59 and a half inches if I guess right. Like 59 and a half pounds. It was like 59 59,
just numbers,
just a beautiful fish.
Yeah,
and there was this lodge owner that caught it, and so I gave the guy a call. It was on the French River, and I gave the guy a call, and his name was Art Barefoot. And
great name.
Isn't that a cool name?
That's a great name.
And Art, if you ever met Art in person, he's just a wonderful guy, but he just looks like a guide.
Right.
He has a name that sounds like a guide. Right?
That totally sounds guide. Yeah, Art Barefoot.
Yeah. Art Barefoot, you know. Yeah. So Art Barefoot caught this big fish, and I got on the phone with the guy and had a conversation with him, and he says, would you like to see it? Well, Art caught the fish and kept it. Uh-huh. You know, and again, you got to understand, like I've told so many of these stories over time, is that, you know, there was a time when we kept more of these fish.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, the catch and release was not as prevalent as it is today. This has morphed over decades.
Right.
So anyways, Art caught and kept this fish. And he says, I've got it in the freezer. I jumped in the truck and I ran up there and I took a look at it to get photographs of it and verify that it actually existed. And I saw it was 59.5 inches and 59.5 pounds.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, yeah, it was just a gargantuan fish.
Yeah, that's unreal. Crazy.
So, you know, Art, you know, then Art said, you know, you ought to come up here and fish this body of water sometime with me. And that's why I went up there and I took him up on it and I went up there and I started fishing it. And that put me on a quest in the early 90s to hunt the French River, which is, you know, kind of a tributary of Georgian Bay and mm-hmm. Lake Huron.
Right.
So you got the Great Lakes, you got Lake Huron, you got Georgian Bay, and you've got the French River. And it's a very famous area, Steve, for big fish. Mm-hmm. And you know, potentially, you know, anything is possible in a body of water like that.
Right.
And Art claimed to have seen fish bigger than than his 59 and a half. And so I went up there in a quest to go and catch some of these. And what I found out right away after just a short period of time fishing is that, first of all, nobody was fishing it at that point. Mm-hmm. And this was a very tough body of water to score on consistently. And I went up there and I fished days and days and days, had not even seen one.
Wow.
So, yeah. So, and I was doing everything in the beginning the way all the locals were, including Art. Art caught this fish trolling a crankbait.
Right.
So I'm thinking, okay, these fish are deep. The French River, by the way, is a deep river system. I mean, there's stretches in there with, you know, where there's nearly 100 or you know, around plus or minus 100 feet of water. So this
pretty serious.
This is not a shallow body of water by any means. And so, you know, I thought, okay, this trolling thing is the way to go. But, you know, and it was interesting. Every once in a while, I'd be looking up in the shallows and I'd see, you know, backwater eddies and I'd even see some weed beds and things like that. I'm thinking, I just wonder if casting would work up here. And I'd asked Art, a few other people, everybody ever cast here? No, it doesn't work up here.
All right, of course.
Well, anyways, you know, the old boot daddy, you know, curiosity got the best of me after hours and hours and hours and hours of trolling and not being successful at it. Right. And I'm a pretty good troller, you know. And I was not successful at it, so I figured these fish got to be somewhere else. And I spent about 2 hours casting and I catch three. So I'm thinking, oh, okay. Maybe I know something. I'm finding out something here right. Somebody else is at door, right? Yeah, so I started. I located and discovered a shallow water bite. And that led me to trip after trip up there to hunt for these big fish. And I started to score fairly consistently on these big fish, you know, fishing with conventional tactics that I'm used to, from fishing over here in northern Wisconsin and you know, in Minnesota and you know, and Ontario and the waters right. I fish over here. And I really started dialing things in. But again, the French River was never easy. Easy.
Is it heavy current and deep water? Or?
Heavy current in spots, neck downs, deep water, and then backwater areas with expansive, you know, milfoil, cabbage weed, backwater areas. It's a big system. Mm-hmm. And so you'll see cabbage and milfoil and backwaters, and you'll slip up in those spots and be bombing topwater and bucktails and stuff over those, and you'll be banging big pike and small pike and largemouth bass and all kinds of right. stuff and big crappies. It's really a diverse fishery, and then it's also got lake trout, lampreys. You know, which is unique, by the way. You know, some of the big pike and muskies we caught up there have lampreys hanging off of them.
Really? Wow.
Yes. And sturgeon. So, in fact, one of the problems I had early in my career fishing up there is I don't know if you've ever experienced this, but I'd be out fishing the French River and all of a sudden see this gigantic fish jump out in the middle of the river. I mean, big fish,
right.
You know, 6 foot, 5-6 foot class fish. And I would just run over there and start trolling through it and casting it. And I thought, these are big muskies, and they were sturgeon.
Yeah.
They were sturgeon. Yeah,
absolutely. And,
you know, finally I started seeing these sturgeon jump close to the boat, and I thought, that kind of looks like a muskie, but it's not a muskie. That's, you know, something that I realized they were sturgeon. Mm-hmm. So anyways, getting back to the musky thing. So I'm starting to dial in what these fish are doing, you know, when they were most susceptible. In this late August, during moon peaks, this is one of the things that also, you know, dialing me back into things that I learned as a guide with moon. I started making all my trips on moon peaks. It seemed to be really effective on this French River. And make a long story short, I'm out there one day with a really close friend of mine who's since deceased. And we catch like, you know, half a dozen fish over 50.
Oh, goodness.
And we, yeah, and this is the first 50 this guy's ever caught. And then he catches another one. Then he catches another one. Oh. And we're catching, we're into a big fish bite. And right. I got him dialed in. And he has to go home. So he leaves and goes home. I'm by myself. I'm self-filming a lot of this stuff back then. You know, it's a,
right.
I've got a, this is like the original GoPro age, you know. I've got a tripod set up on the boat with a VHS camera, and I'm filming by myself. And I pull in. I'm finding these fish at the. I found these fish in this August bite, in heavy current. But you had to fish in the current, but they were just outside. They were just in these eddies, but in the heavy current. So your boat would be in these dangerous spots. And you could only fish it with a tiller outboard because you really couldn't steer and make a cast.
Oh, goodness.
You know, so if you and I were fishing, you would have to just run the boat.
Right.
You just, you know what I mean?
No option.
Then,
right.
And then you go to the next spot, and then I would run the boat, and you would cast, and so on. And so I'm sitting back. Imagine I've got my old tiller. It's my old 680 Ranger system, my loaded tiller, kind of like what Chaz Martin fishes out of still. And I'm standing in the back, you know, the tiller's between my legs. I pull into these neck, you can imagine the big French River, then it had these little neck downs where the current would just like push and rush, and it would push over these boulders, and there'd be these little eddy backwaters. So I would put the engine, put it in reverse to slow down my push through this current. And then I would be firing my, and I was catching mostly fish on Booker tails, you know, on Booker tails, Willow Buck 700s. I would fire into these spots, and then, you know, let that bucktail just wash into these eddies, and it would find itself, would find these little eddies in the current, and boom, I score on a big fish. And, you know, this is when I started finding out where these fish were. And I'm trying to set up what happened here. But anyways, what ended up happening was, I dialed in after all these fish we caught on this trip, and my buddy leaves. I go out and like have the day of all days by myself. I catch a 50 and an eighth, a 52 and a half by like almost 26
right.
in the summer.
Oh,
just
man.
Just fantastic fish. And one of my biggest, and my biggest at that time, which was like 55 and a half.
And that, yeah. That's a singular day.
Unbelievable. The 55, by the way, I hooked this fish in this current, and it literally stripped all the line off my reel, and I had to chase this fish. I had to chase this fish forever, you know. Just we get in the, when you fight these big fish, you know, they're a load to fight anybody. But when they get in this current, it's like you're fighting, you know. It's like you're fighting a 150-pound fish.
And you're just chasing him down current with the boat?
Chasing him down current. You know, you'd catch him out, you'd hook him out of current, but then, you know, as soon as you'd be fighting him, but all of a sudden in the current they go, and whoom, you know, they would just go, and then you'd have to put the motor in forward and just go. So you're fighting this fish, keeping a tight line, and driving through these rock wall neck down bluffs. Battling a muskie, if you can imagine,
yeah.
Really interesting, fun stuff. And you know, when you get on the backside of one of these neck downs, you know, I'd just motor out of the current, and I finish fighting these fish, and it was pretty amazing. So here it is. Okay, so still think about it. Here's the scenario, folks. I caught a fish just over 50. I got the fat, one of the fattest 52 and a half inch summer fish I've ever caught. That fish, by the way, was a beast. Then I hooked this 55 that empties my spool, and I land it. And it's the biggest fish I've ever caught. I hook a bigger one.
Oh, my God.
I hook a fish so big. I'm dialed into them. And here's the other thing. I was young then. Okay. Mm-hmm. I would drive all night get to my fishing location, drive 14 hours, get the fishing location, fish all day. And if the lodging wasn't available, I would just sleep in the boat.
Been there. I love it.
Yeah. I would sleep. I would anchor out in the middle of the French River.
Just crash out.
I had a cooler full of food. I would sleep, get up in the morning, eat, and take a dive in a lake if I need to clean up, and I'd be right back fishing. That's how hardcore. That's how I'm still pretty tough, as you know.
Yeah, you're tough.
But that's how hardcore I used to be.
Yeah.
You know, and so I got 350 inchers, and I got the pattern going. I'm thinking to myself, this is the day of all days.
Right.
You know, you've been there when you get one of those days where, hey, the big fish are really going in a system like that. And, you know, and you've had a lot of dead fishing, and you're on a trip like this where they're really going, and all the biggest fish in the system are ready to bite. I want to duplicate this, and you know, I don't want this day to end.
No, you just stay on.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right. So I pull up into this spot, and my buddy Gabor, my buddy who was fishing with me prior to leaving, he caught his biggest fish in the spot. And I pulled into the spot. It was one of these many current neck downs that we fished. And I pulled into the spot, put my motor in reverse, and I'm, you know, trying to stay out of the current from, you know, and by the way, if you don't do this, where a lot of these washes were, they're spillover. So you'll smash your boat in the rocks, and then your boat's going to go over a spillway.
Yeah, that sounds exciting. It's
super dangerous. I think that's why, you know, it was nobody fished these spots, because it was just too dangerous, and they didn't realize what was going on.
They didn't think the fish would be there, much less spending the time to get into that. Yeah, that's it.
And getting into these spots. So I cast about where my buddy hooks his fish, right? And we successfully land his biggest muskie a couple days earlier. And fire into this spot, and I just my bucktail was one of those old willow bucks.
That's like the hand hammered blade ones.
Remember the long number seven willow bladed bookertails. We're coming back out with that bait, by the way. Mm-hmm. That was a popular big fish bait, and it was a willow buck in that perch with an orange blade. And I just landed it in this heavy current, and then it washed into this eddy, and I saw this boil, and I thought. And, you know, this big, huge boil about half the size of a boat. I thought, you know, I just thought it was because you're fishing a current. You just thought it was an eddy from a boulder, you know, a big boulder underneath. Right.
Right.
But all of a sudden my bait disappeared. And, you know, my brain didn't engage right away and go, you know, boil, bait disappeared, rod is bending. Big fish just struck.
Oh yeah, when the boils are that big, sometimes you just go, huh?
Yeah, yeah, and you know, but you know, it was deceiving in this case, Steve, because of the current.
Right.
So you know, you see a boil out in the lake, you know, yeah, it's musky.
Yeah.
But you know, when you're seeing all of these eddies and these boils and current, you're seeing them all the time. So right. You know, it could be a huge rock underneath you, the size of a car. You know, and the French River's loaded with those. So you know. Anyways, you can see the blade, you know, the fluorescent blade, and all of a sudden the blade disappears. I see this boil, and the rod just, there wasn't a big strike. It just bent. Mm-hmm. The rod just bent. And, you know, like the fish just grabbed it and just started to turn a little bit, and just the current just backed away. My rod bent, and I set the hook. Rod doesn't, you know, the rod just doubles and doesn't move. Mm-hmm. And you know, I'm, my first inclination too, is like, I'm snagged.
Right.
What did I snag on out there? I pull up on my rod, and I gunned the outboard in reverse a little bit to kind of pull me out of this current a little more, because I can't go in and get it. I'm gonna have to snap the line off.
Right.
But no, all of a sudden the line's coming up, and then on the surface, this entire muskie comes up on the surface and starts thrashing, and it's got my bait buried deep in his mouth. And this fish is, you know, easily 5 feet long. It's got the head the size of a, you know, that could swallow a basketball.
Right.
And it's just going.
Now, this is the same day you've already caught three over 50, right?
Exactly.
So you have perspective. Exactly. Yeah.
So, yeah, this is, by the way, this is why for many years I didn't even take, I didn't make a big deal or respect the 55 and a half that I caught as much as I do maybe more today, because I hooked and lost one much bigger, and I've got it on right now. Mm-hmm. I've got this fish on. I got it well hooked. I'm trying to get it out. So the fish is on the surface. And this fish is so big that it doesn't fight like other fish. It's just like, it's like you're hooked onto, you know, if you've had a chance to watch the new movie, the Godzilla movie, you know, what Godzilla does, when he does his thing, he doesn't really, you know, he's the alpha.
Godzilla does what Godzilla wants to do.
Yeah, it's an alpha. This is an alpha fish that, you know, so this alpha fish gets on the surface and just kind of like, you know, it's like, you know, what's bothering me here? You know, so it just does a couple of head thrashes, you know, and if you can imagine, it's just, you know, this huge mouth going, oh, I can still see it, you know, uh-huh. 20 plus years later, I still see it going, like it was a slow-mo, and I'm backing the fish out, and all of a sudden, I'm thinking all this time, I own this fish because I got it well hooked.
Right.
I'm just got to back it out of the current. By the way, we didn't have super lines back then.
Are you on mono or on
spec? No, I'm on 36-pound Dacron.
Okay.
You know, so, you know, leaders weren't what they are now. Right. We didn't have cross lock snaps, and we didn't have, you know, fast attached snaps. We didn't have all this stuff back then. And I'm backing this fish out of the current, and tremendous pressure on the fish, too much pressure, mm-hmm. and. Boom, she's off. And I thought, you got to be kidding me. You know, so my heart sunk, and then I backed out of the heavy current spot to get over in this quiet water area. And mm-hmm. I reel my lure in. I reel my line in, and my leader's there. You know, and the snap was opened up. So the snap, it was a cross lock snap, which mm-hmm. is still a popular snap. Sold on many leaders today, and the only thing I can think of was either it was a stress snap, or during the battle the lure actually got. I tried to do, you know, replicate this even, you know, by you know, trying to tangle it during the, you know, the battle of this fish thrashing. My assumption is that the leader tangled in the lure. And it actually had a strange angle on it and opened the snap up. That may or may not be correct, because I don't think he could have just pulled this leader open.
Right.
The snap open. But the snap, if you imagine taking a cross lock snap and just bending it completely open, that's what happened. So here it gets worse.
Oh God.
So I'm sitting over there in the quiet water looking at the snap, and all of a sudden I hear a thrashing. I look on the surface over there, and there she is. She's on the surface over there going, a couple times trying to shake this thing,
uh-huh.
you know? And I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm just going to sit here for until maybe I can still get this fish, you know? Right. So I sat around, and she went down,
right.
And I hung around for another day.
Another day.
Yeah, another day. Tried, you know, thinking maybe she would, you know, get tired. Because I've had that happen. I've actually had that happen a couple times in my career guiding, especially back in those days when we didn't have the good lines we had, where clients would break lines.
When I grew up, we were fishing mono and you just lost fish. Yeah, absolutely. Come back and
go. Yeah, well, you know, especially if they had a big bait in their mouth, they'd shake it till they were tired and they'd be laying on the surface. One of my early night fishing escapades, I didn't uh-huh. get this fish, by the way. It's just a legend in the memory now. I never did get this fish, and all it is a memory and a fish story. But it was a story where I caught 3 over 50 and had one, let's say, even if I was wrong, it was still 58 to 59, but it was a 60-inch class fish,
right?
All in one day, and that's what can happen on those special days. But I was out night fishing. Uh-huh. The reason I stuck around, I was out night fishing with a guide party around that same time in my life at night. Right. And that's back when I was guiding at night a lot. And a guy hooked and lost a good fish, broke the line. Had a fray or something in the line and broke the line. And, you know, he's just sick. And so we tied on another leader, another lure, and we're fishing a couple other spots. And you know, the lakes in Northern Wisconsin are smaller.
Mm-hmm.
It was a quiet night, and I could hear a splashing over in that spot, you know, where he hooked that fish. So I knew that fish was over there trying to throw that lure, Steve.
Right.
And this guy owned a lodge over there. The name of the lodge was Evergreen Lodge. Uh-huh. This guy had never caught a muskie before. So this was his first muskie.
Had to hire you to come teach him.
Oh, this is great. So we're hearing this splashing. And I finally said to him, I says, you want to go over and get, you know, you still want that muskie that you lost? He was just sick. He lost.
Right.
I says, your muskie's sitting over there on the surface. Uh-huh. And we go over there and we spotlight, and all of a sudden there you can see the fish's belly up trying to thrash that bait. And we went over and got that fish, and that fish had eaten that whole depth reader all the way down.
All right.
All three trebles in it. Got the bait back, got the fish, got photos of him with the fish, put the fish back. Fish swims away. Now he's got the fish, that lure out of his mouth. The fish swims away. Everybody's happy. He gets a replica mount. And another fish story. Put the rest. Isn't that something?
That's amazing. That was just delayed gratitude or gratification on that fish. Just
yeah, there's so many stories like that. But the Fresh River one is special.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, every once in a while, you still see big fish coming out of there. Uh-huh. The guys that know the water well. And Art, I'm sure Art Barefoot is still out there catching them. Mm-hmm. But you know, that was a very special time in my life. I've cracked 50 twice in one day since then.
Right.
But I've never cracked 53 times. Now the guys out in Lake St. Clair, they may be doing that more often.
Right.
But it's Lake St. Clair.
Right.
You know, it's a different deal. And you know, a lot of these guys are having these 15, 20, 20 fish days, you know, a lot of those are trolling days too. Mm-hmm. That 20 fish plus day I had was a casting. That was a casting deal.
Right.
And a night fishing deal. Fishing from dusk till dawn.
Oh, just over the entire course of the night. Yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those nights, just like, you know, just like one of those days on French River where it just went crazy. But you know, it's what's really funny about that is, okay, the wrap up the French River thing, folks. When I lost that big fish, it was like a curse. Mm. It took something out of me for, I would say, almost a decade. And secondly, I never was able to get that mojo back on the French River. I never got the mojo back at the French River. I just never got it back. I go back on several trips after that, and I was always struggled. I couldn't get my mojo back on that lake after losing that one big fish. And I know maybe it was a mind game more than anything else, but I planned my trips the same way I did. I fished the same way I did. Knew more about the water than I did, you know, when I first started out there. Yeah, I never got my mojo back. It was almost like losing that big fish. It was like a curse. Isn't that amazing?
Oh, that's crazy. And you lose a big fish, it just takes the wind out of your sails, period. I know that fish is sort of the reason you started the no BS system on leaders.
You're exactly right. You're exactly right. Yeah. It was then the no BS system, folks, is no snap at all.
Yeah.
And after that, you know, I was just so leery of snaps. I didn't trust any of them. So I developed this split ring system where I split ringed all my lures. I used a really high performance 300-pound class split ring, saltwater class split ring, and I put one on every one of my lures, and I split ringed each one of my lures directly to a piano wire leader, so there was no snap. And then you added down the road, we added, you know, super lines, braided lines to the mix, and it pretty much eliminated a lot of these issues. Of course, you know, anytime you're dealing with terminal tackle and fishing situations, so many different things can happen. But it was more prevalent back then, you know, Steve. It was, yeah. And as you go back a decade before that, it was even worse. And a decade before, it was even worse than that, where lines would break, you know, leaders would fail, lures would fail.
Yeah, absolutely. There was a lot of bad lures and a lot of bad equipment. The one thing that, you know, I'm not 65, I'm in my late 30s, but you know, growing up, even what I saw in the late 80s, 90s is the difference in equipment from even now to then, and what you dealt with is amazing. You know, what kind of rod were you on? A 6'6", I'm betting? Maybe a 7-footer when you're fishing those things?
Well, you know, a 7-footer, yeah, 7-footer. If you look at my first book, Bucktail Fishing for Muskies, uh-huh. You know, I talked about a 7-foot rod being, you know,
the deal
then, you know, because 7.5-foot rods, because you could do better figure eights with them, you know. And
right.
And the problem with 8-foot rods back then, 8-foot and 8.5-foot rods is, is you, they just, you know, the rod companies just didn't build them for us.
Right.
They just didn't have the horsepower.
Right.
Yeah. We just didn't have the stuff. And there were a couple of guys that were really, you know, there were a couple of guys that were really pioneers on the long mm-hmm. rod thing. Even before I was, you know, one of my friends, a fellow guide in Boulder Junction, Tommy Swanson, he was a long rod guy way before I was. Right. And he was totally dialed into the effectiveness of the 7.5, 8 foot, 8.5 foot rods. Right. And Tommy did a lot of steelhead and salmon fishing too. And fly fishing, he understood the whole concept of the long rod mm-hmm. and how deadly they were on the figure eight. And, you know, once you hook a fish and you're battling them and stuff, it's just better. And I finally graduated to myself, and, you know, now I'm a huge proponent of the long rod and love the 9 foot rod. Mm-hmm. I know you do too.
Yeah. But you know, what you're saying about the difference in equipment. I mean, it used to be 6 foot, 7 foot, or seven footer was it. And, you know,
that's even it.
30 pound mono, or like you said, that with it, when you were throwing the Dracon or, the 36 pound line, you know,
36 just, pound background, Steve, it's like using old Ernie Ball, strings on your guitar, you know,
don't be knocking,
still used today,
don't
right?
be knocking the Ernie Ball power slinkies, Ernie Ball, if you're listening. I might cut that part out, but yes, I send as many cases of 11 to 52s as you can, please. But for all you people listening on the Muskie 360 app, but one thing that I would love to delve into just for a second here, that on that story that I've always wanted to know, is how did you find that pattern on with we're dealing with heavy current, we're dealing with the small eddies here. Was that a bait fish pattern? Was that just a if someone's in a similar situation and they're looking for these big fish in a heavy current situation, is it that they're using those eddies to come out and attack their prey, or is the prey slipping into the eddies? What's sort of your thought process on that patterning on the trip?
Well, I ended up finding the casting bite, you know, the shallow water casting bite, mm-hmm. then I started to explore where it worked. And seasonally, it changed a lot. But, you know, mm-hmm. by late summer, it was a current. Early in the summer, you know, and late spring, early summer, these fish were in backwaters, and we would catch them totally out of current.
Right.
You would catch them in backwaters and in warm water areas. Sometimes it was associated with wheat growth, sometimes it wasn't. But these big fish in this late summer, early fall thing that, you know, that I really dialed into was they were in that current, but they weren't deep. They were near that heavy current, excuse me, but they weren't deep.
Just on the seam of it, more so than anything?
Just on exactly. So, you know, it was easy to read because, you know, once I learned that, you know, these fish were feeding shallow. Mm-hmm. Or not, so you could catch them casting. And casting was more effective than trolling in this instance because you just casted, and you're, you know, by placing short precision cast, you could find the current breaks. Some of them were visible because you'd have a big rock or boulder sticking out of the water.
Right.
Sometimes it was just, you could see there was a subsurface boulder or whatever, because you could see a boil or an eddy. That, by the way, was the situation where that super big one was.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And some of them were even more subtle than that, where if you can imagine, right before these river would neck down, you'd have a widening with a cluster of islands, but there'd be the cluster of islands would be closest to where the neck down would, there be a, you know, an increased funneling of current there, mm-hmm. and there'd be these little eddies and stuff on the backside of some of these spots, and that's where the 52.5 came from. And I found it just by hardcore casting, you know, spending time at it, you know, picking apart the water piece by piece by piece, and then one fish, scoring on one fish broke, you know, part of the puzzle open. And then, okay, this is, that fish was sitting here. I don't know if they were feeding on suckers, if they were feeding on some kind of a herring or mm-hmm. alewife or cisco or anything like that. Obviously were feeding on something,
right?
But they were positioning themselves. It's kind of interesting because those fish, by the way, were positioning themselves where most people wouldn't cast. Too dangerous to hold the boat in there. So guys would just drive by those spots and fish heavily in those open areas. If you can just imagine an hourglass, mm-hmm. they would fish heavily on the wide spot in the upper part of the hourglass, and they'd fish heavily on the downside of the hourglass. I was fishing in the hourglass. in the, you know, in the neck down to the hourglass, and finding those little spots in the neck down to the hourglass and both sides of the neck down to the hourglass is where the big boys were.
One thing I would mention is the mounts. Aren't the mounts for those three fish at one of our sponsors, the Muskie Shop, correct?
Yes. In fact, the 55-incher is on display at the Muskie Shop. If you ever get a chance to stop in at the Muskie Shop, in their actual in-store, in their showroom, a lot of my mounts, my old skin mounts, are in there, and a replica of the 55.5. I did release all three of those 50s. That I caught that day. I was already into the catch and release thing big then. And in fact, that entire week, all those 50s we caught that week, all those fish were released. And that 55.5 was released, but I got a replica of it. And Mr. Joel Fatani built a beautiful, I had some great photos of the fish, by the way. We should put a picture of that fish.
Oh, we will, absolutely.
Folks can see it, but that fish was a beast. You know, back then, by the way, that was when, you know, I held the fish vertically, so you could see how long it was.
Right.
You know, that fish was as long as I was.
We'll save that for another podcast.
Sounds good.
All right, buddy. Well, thank you so much for being on. We're going to definitely have some more Booker big fish stories here on the Muskie 360 podcast. Talk to you later, folks.
10-4.